Hello, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Kol Nefesh Yamim Noraim Liturgical Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Schlesinger, and I'm recording this podcast during the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, I'm happy to introduce my guest, Alan Myers. Alan is not only often found leading services at Kol Nefesh, he is also responsible for the management of the Davening and Learning Rotas. Without much further ado, here's episode 5. Hello, Alan. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Before we jump into high holidays, I would like to take a step back. In the earlier episodes, what we discovered is that everyone has a very unique way to reach destination they're at in terms of their communal engagement. And I would love to start by asking you how you find your way to where you are within the community.
Many years ago, I was a member of what was then called Edgware Reform Synagogue. And somebody called Jackie Chernett popped up one day and said, we're going to try something new at Edgware Reform. We're going to try something which is called a conservative service. Having been brought up in the United Synagogue, I suddenly found when I went to this conservative service that all the things that they'd missed out in the Reform service had been put back in. And all the things I remember from my childhood when I was like 11 years old and I was the chazan of the junior service at Edgware Synagogue, all these things, tunes and the things that I'd missed out, came back in. And it was a revelation. And as I say, the rest is history.
That is great. That really shows an involvement with the shul from a very young age, and that lasted for years.
I was very involved with the shul from the age of 5. I was in the cheder. When I got to 11, they thought I had a voice, I could sing in tune. So they made me lead services, and I loved it. But then I went away from religion when I was about 16 and didn't come back to it until my honeymoon, where my wife took me to Israel. And when I came back, I felt I needed to reconnect with the Jewish community. So I joined the Reform Synagogue, which was right opposite my house.
And this was the Edgware Reform Synagogue?
Yes.
From just attending a synagogue, you've reached a point where you make synagogue happen, so to speak.
Somebody called Neil Kaufman came up to me one day at Edgware Reform and said, "We've got a vacancy on the council. How would you like to be on the council?" And I said to him, "I can't do it because I don't have a deep religious commitment." So I didn't. But then when Edgware Masorti Synagogue started, I think the same person asked me the same question. And he said, "It's pretty simple. You only have to attend one meeting a month." So I said, okay. And I became a member of the fundraising committee at that time. And then from then onwards, I got promoted and eventually ended up as co-chairman.
Oh, wow. Okay. One of the questions I suppose I never asked you, I know that your commitment is split between both Kol Nefesh and Edgware Masorti.
That's correct.
It's very nice to get a bit of background as well. So I feel like it's not just a podcast. I'm actually getting to know my guests as well. So that's
right.
So from co-chair of a synagogue to not only managing the Davening and Learning Rota, but also being a part of it.
That's happened because I actually became a member of Kol Nefesh at the same time as Annetta, a very learned scholar. And we both joined at the same time. And I think the person who was doing the rota was Mike Fenster, and he wanted to divest himself of his responsibilities. So Annetta and I just joined, and we volunteered to take over the rota. And I did the rota with Annetta for a few months, and then she dropped out and I did it with Andrew Bowman. And then he dropped out and I did it with Melanie Kelly. And then I came to realize actually it was easier to do it myself rather than to collaborate. After a few times when my collaborators couldn't make it, I just decided to do it by myself.
And you did really, really well. So thank you for all the work you put into the rota.
Well, it's really a clerical job. And what amazed me when I started doing it was you pick out these people's names. I've got a list of people who are able to do one service or another, people who are able to lay in 5 verses, 10 verses, 20 verses. You put them in the rota, you turn up at shul, and they're there. They've come, and they've fulfilled their obligations. And it amazes me every week when I go to shul that 90% of the people turn up.
I should hope.
Yes.
You briefly touched upon it already, but obviously during the lockdown, we were unable to host physical services. And only in the past few weeks, we started to reopen. We've had 3 or 4 Shabbatot on a very socially distanced, limited regime. As an active participant who organized the services in the past, but also takes part in them, how are you managing in the times when there isn't a shul to come to on a Saturday morning?
Well, I've been actually going to the Chavurah service, which Edgware Masorti has been streaming online. And I find that quite satisfying. We get about 25 to 35 people. It's about an hour. We have a sort of a truncated shacharit. We have a drasha. We have a laning of the first two aliyot. Then we have some kind of drasha about the haftarah and prayers for the community. And we bring our own kiddush. So we're able to share lots of exotic whiskies between us.
I suppose this is the one time where you won't be late for lunch because of shul. Whilst we're on the topic of services, there seems to be a consensus of the speakers on the podcast that there is something very special about the way Kol Nefesh does services. Is there a memory or a special event that's associated with the services and with the shul that you'd like to share with us?
My son Daniel, when he was a member of the shul, led lots of services and did lots of laning. I think he started before me because on his bar mitzvah, he led Torah service and musaf. And I then came to be a shliach tzibur after him. But actually, when I'm leading a service, I can hear his voice in me. And he's a much better singer or musician than I am. But he's very well liked in the community, and I think Jackie still misses him, and we all miss him in the shul. It was nice to recall his voice. And as I say, hearing his voice when I was singing was very gratifying.
Yes, absolutely. And you've, over the years, branched out onto other services as well, not just Shabbat Shachrit.
I started learning Shabbat Shachrit. We had two, how can I say, mature people at Edgware Masorti, which was Cecil Berman and Bernard Mushin, who taught us the Nusach of Shabbat Shachrit. I think Jackie and Neil were present at those sessions, and that's really when I started. And then Jackie ran a workshop over a period of about 6 months to learn Shachrit for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which I graduated from. And then I've learnt other services by getting tapes from people like Gilad. It was suggested to me that I do what you're doing, which is to do what Jackie calls the matbea. And I suppose if I had another 20 years, I could do it. But I've given it a miss for the time being. And I think I'm happy to stick at what I've learnt so far.
I think there's no age limit to learning. And as long as something that makes you happy and you find some fulfillment in doing it, I would definitely encourage you to go for the Baal Tefillah diploma.
Well, I mean, I have learned a few more services as I've been going along. But I think as you get older, it takes longer to master a new skill than it did when one was younger.
That's fair enough. The teachers that Egil has are really patient and really good. And if there's particular service you would like to master, then I'm very confident they would help you to get there.
There might be some services I'd like to improve, and maybe I'll take you up on that.
Alan, I would now like to move specifically to the High Holidays. We would probably agree that these are the holiest days of the Jewish calendar. What do you think makes them so special?
When I was growing up, Rosh Hashanah was a special day. We weren't a very religious family, but we did go to shul every week. When it came to Rosh Hashanah, there was a sense of awe in that, those 3 days were the 3 days when we really obeyed more of the laws than we did every other week. For me, they were days of awe because the very words Rosh Hashanah, or Rosh Hashanah, as my mother used to call it, were days when you had a sort of awareness that they were special. And I know that I learnt in Cheder that every Shabbat is supposed to be the holiest day of the week. But in our family, as a sort of somebody who only observed Judaism sort of once a week, the days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur were special because there were just things you didn't do on those days. You approached it with a different attitude. And then there's the Nusach. When I learnt the Nusach for Shacharit for Rosh Hashanah at Jackie's course, because I remembered all the traditional Nusach that I used to hear all those years ago at Ochoa United Synagogue. Those modes and that Nusach is very evocative of childhood. So when I'm singing the Nusach for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I'm remembering stuff that I learned, well, now it's 60 years ago. And it's a very fond memory of things that I learned when I was young.
It's very beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Before we get to the liturgy, you mentioned that in the childhood and back in the past, the period between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur were special because there was a heightened level of observance in your family. Is there a special custom or something that makes you stop and feel, this is it, these high holidays are here?
I think it's dressing in white. My mother-in-law bought me a kittel when I started becoming a shliach tzibur. And when I put on the kittel when I'm leaving a service, That's what makes me feel special, because you're clothing yourself in white. Later on, I learned that for Yom Kippur, the day is like death and rebirth, because you're wearing a shroud like you do when you're dead. And at the end of the service, you're saying the confession you say on a deathbed. So really, wearing white and then saying the confession at the end is like reenacting your death and starting again.
Yes, absolutely. I led the Torah service on Yom Kippur last year for the first time. And having led many Torah services in the past, being dressed in a kittel and standing in front of not just the 20 people who come on Shabbos, but in front of the whole community, suddenly you've got like hundreds of people there and they're expecting something, not quite knowing what, mainly because the Nusach of the High Holidays is very different to the usual Shabbat Nusach. And suddenly it's a massive responsibility.
Jackie teaches us that the focus shouldn't be on you as a service leader, because you're just an enabler. What you've got to do is to transfer whatever you feel about the tefillot to the congregation, which is a very difficult thing to do, which is what we try to do on the Ijul retreats. I'm conscious that even though I feel I'm the center of attraction, it's a big ego trip. This is not the way it should be. And I'm trying to suppress that. And I'm trying to communicate whatever depth I can manage to muster to the people who are generally behind me, which is a very difficult thing to do. But every time I go to an Ijul retreat, I get a little bit further along that line and I manage to do a little bit more of that.
That's fantastic. There definitely is a burden of responsibility, especially as a high holiday, Shliach Tzibur.
You say that there is a responsibility. But the other thing is, a shliach tzibur should never worry that he or she is making mistakes or getting things wrong, because he or she is not the focus. He or she is a conduit or an enabler. So I've come to realize that if I get a word wrong, it doesn't matter, because what's important is conveying the depth of feeling that the prayers engender, trying to communicate that to the congregation.
Absolutely.
I hope that people listening to this, if they've got some kind of inclination to lead a service, would get involved with Ijul and come to a retreat, because it's amazing the difference it makes to one's activities as a shliach tzibur.
Yes, of course, the supportive network that builds, the literal Kehillah Kedusha, kind of built from people who may have not met each other in the past, but they're united in the purpose of facilitating a good tefillah experience. It's magical.
Yeah, and the best thing about it is you do it in a what we call a safe space, which means that if you're learning how to do a service, it doesn't matter if you make tons of mistakes, because you're in a safe space and you're amongst friends and, you know, you're going to share your experience and make it better by collaborating with the people who've been listening to you.
Fantastic. Hopefully people have been listening to the podcast and have finally realized that we do eventually get to talk about the tefillah and the tefillah of Yamim Noraim in particular. For this podcast, you told me you'd like to have a look at the Uvachains, which can be found in the Chazarat Hashatz for the Amidah.
Well, actually, it's the first three paragraphs of the Kedusha all start with the word Uvachain, which means therefore. And I think the reason why these three paragraphs are added is because we spent the first three paragraphs before that building up to the time, as Rabbi Joel says, we crown God as king. This bracha, which is the Kedusha bracha, starts with the word therefore. We are sort of saying to God, we know it's a special day, and we know we've all assembled here for a special purpose. We're singing all these piyutim, all these special hymns, which we don't sing on any other day. And therefore, we want you, God, to give us things. And so the three paragraphs that start off with the words Uvachain basically says that we want God to let his creatures sense God's power. And we want God to recognize that we're revering him. And we want all the people who do that to be glad and celebrate in song. And the song bit is the third Uvachain paragraph. But the purpose of the Amidah is, as Rabbi Joel says, a conversation with God. And this is what we're saying at this particular time. The music and the nusach of these three paragraphs is so beautiful, especially with the nigun that we put in between this first and second and third, that I find it very moving.
Would you be up for demonstrating a bit of that nusach for us?
Sure. Uvachin ten pachtachat on our lahenu, al kol masecha, vie matacha, al kol ma shebarata, vayerucha kolabal sim, vishtachavula fanecha kol habruim, vayasu hulama gudachat, la sotra sona ka beleva shalem. Kamo sheyadanu Adonai Eloheinu Shashilton lefanecha Oz beyadcha Ugvura biminecha Veshimcha nora Al kol ma shebarata Lai la la lai 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 La 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 Uvachin ten kavod Adonai le'amecha Tehila li'recha V'tikva le'doreshecha U'fitchon peh lam yachalim lach Simcha li'atzecha Sason Lirecha Utsmichat Keren the David Avdecha Yarichat Neleven Yishai Meshechecha Bimheira Yameinu Lai la la lai 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 la la lai 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 La 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 Uvechein tzadikim yiru veyispachu visharim yalozu vachasidim berina yagilu violatatikots piha vachola rishakula kashantichle kitavim emshelet zadon Min haaretz.
That was beautiful, thank you.
Those tunes are unique for that 3 days, actually. They're modes that sort of catch you and take you right into those days. And for me, they're memories of what I learned from a very young age and things that I sort of left behind me that I came back to in later life.
Besides having encountered these melodies from a very young age, what made you select exactly these few paragraphs for today?
It's just those tunes. And the Nigod, this Lila La Lila, it's such a beautiful tune. I mean, it makes me very emotional when I sing it, actually.
Oh, that's very powerful. Thank you. As a community, we are very fortunate to have Shlichei Tzibur who really take this job very seriously. And once you feel that the Shliach Tzibur is invested in the service, it really facilitates a very special experience to people who came and enjoyed the service.
It's only because we've been trained to do it. It was only when I learned from Ijol that I managed to do it with a purpose that it was designed for.
And ultimately, everyone benefits from that. So
I hope so, yes.
These high holidays will be very different to the high holidays we had in the past. Is there anything you'd like to share with the community?
This year is more important than ever that we get together and try and re-establish the awesomeness of these 3 days. It's quite difficult to do it when you're stuck at home, even if you're just listening to a service, because you've got so many more distractions when you're at home. I hope that people will try and get as much awe from these 3 days as we can when it's in a normal year.
Of course. Having attended a few of these planning meetings for high holidays, the amount of thought that goes into trying to create something meaningful that everyone can partake in is amazing. And I would like to also say thank you to everyone who does make this possible. If by giving their time or organising something, it's a massive communal effort to try connected during this pandemic, and everyone is doing such a great job. Thank you, Alan, for joining me today, and thank you all for listening. I really hope you're enjoying the podcasts. Please stay tuned for further conversations with other members of Colnefish about their liturgical highlights of the High Holidays. Until the next time.